Where's your favorite place to take College Game Day? And I say every time, Eugene, Oregon.
Hello and welcome, Duck fans, where and whenever you are watching or listening. This is the Once a Duck podcast, where we bring you up to date with current and former University of Oregon athletes and give you never-before-heard stories about your favorite teams and moments in Duck history. As always, I'm your host, former Oregon offensive lineman Nick Cody, and now Hall of Famer. And with me, as always, is my co-host, Samuel Tidrick-Smith. And this was definitely a weekend that will go down in Duck's history. A big win over BYU and going into Pac-12 play against Wazoo at their place. And I'm telling you, I hate to say I told you so, but I told you so. I knew this was going to be a big win for Oregon, but even bigger than I expected. Sam, what'd you think about the results of this weekend?
Oh, Nick, that was beautiful, wasn't it? That was just so much fun. And you know what? It was beautiful for so many reasons. It was beautiful to see an Oregon football team take the field with that much vigor and excitement. It was beautiful to see the amount of responses, small mistakes, but then bigger responses made to those mistakes. And most of all, it was beautiful to have a great game, a great game day atmosphere, a hostile Autzen Stadium. And it was fantastic to see you before the game as well, buddy.
Yes, sir. And on that note, I thought this weekend, you know, let's not mention other college football games. It's not even worth it. We have so much to talk about this game. For this lightning round, let's talk about our game day experiences this weekend. I'll go ahead and fire it up, hit off the clock. First, Friday evening, man, got to go down, check out the HDC for an exclusive tour where I got to hear that now the defensive players get to take up the big offensive meeting room and the team meeting room for the team, which was pretty incredible to hear and see, but also picked up a little new hardware, something I got to throw up in the background here, Sam. This nice little Hall of Fame plaque I earned as a backup on the 2010 team. Pretty honored to have that, but I partied like a starter.
Well, Nick, I am glad to hear so. I definitely got into the party a little bit late, but was excited to see you at it once we got there. A fantastic tailgate before the game, which, by the way, we should give a shout out to the people who helped put that on. All such a fantastic job done by everybody. It was a fantastic atmosphere. And I really do appreciate being able to enjoy some of the more ordinary game day festivities now that I've reached this point in my Autzen going career. And tailgating, that's definitely one of them.
Well, man, and a big shout out to at Autzen Zoo member. If you aren't already following him, give him a follow. That's T-Rod. He's got one of the best tailgates. And if you're good, we'll let you know where it is. But, man, what a great time there. And a couple others I got to stop along the way, which I'll have to hit again before the Stanford game. But incredible. Great to see you. And then got to go in. That gave us all of Hall of Famers a free pass into the Order of the O alumni tailgate. So that was pretty awesome. And just the lead up to the game, I got to see so many people get so much recognition, so many congratulations. I can't give enough thanks out to all of you for treating me like a real Hall of Famer.
Well, Nick, there is no treating like a real Hall of Famer. You are a real Hall of Famer, so you got to be treated like one, it seems. I definitely enjoyed the Hall of Fame experience, mostly just being able to see people react to you out there. It was a whole lot of fun to be able to be a part of it just for a couple of minutes. But moving back toward Autzen Stadium, as we did toward kickoff, man, it was just such a fun vibe around the building. You could tell that this was the biggest non-conference game Oregon has played in some time. And of course, Autzen's always loud and popping for a Pac-12 game, of course, but a non-conference game is just something fun, something different about that. It was great to see the Autzen crowd take advantage of such a wild day.
Yep. And that's our lightning round. But yeah, BYU crowd showed up. The energy was high. It was great to be back in the Mashovsky Center for the first time for me in a long time with people in there. And what a special day. But hey, you know, this is going to be a special week, I think, for this team and a real test. But I think a lot of people were expecting that test last week. And if there was one, I know Bo Nix passed it. I'm telling you right now, as I said on Twitter, if you didn't believe this guy was our quarterback before this game, I mean, he played about as good as you could. I mean, maybe one or two throws he wants back, but ultimately, especially in terms of just executing the tempo of the offense, getting some of those short down situations and in a fast tempo, I mean, great execution on his part. And I think that needs to stand out as we talk about our players of the game.
Well, you know, Bo Nix is the player of the game, like a clear in a way, player of the game, got just about every award that he could hope to get this week in response to the game he had, and he absolutely deserved it. Here in my notes, I rewatched that BYU game, got plenty of notes on it. Number one being, Nix just looked so in control that entire day. He never looked as if he was at all worried about what was going on. He looked so confident in what he was doing. Those numbers, they back that up as well. 13 of 18, 222 yards, two touchdowns, zero interceptions for Bo Nix, and then rushing the ball, where we saw him do the most damage, nine rushes, 35 yards, three touchdowns. Yeah, three rushing touchdowns. First Oregon quarterback with three rushing, two throwing since who? Marcus Mariota, 2014. That is what Nix was able to do against this BYU team, and it was really, really, really impressive stuff. I said it to you. I've said it on Twitter. I've said it all the week. If at this point you still don't think Bo Nix is the answer for the Oregon Ducks, there's just something wrong with you. He has proven through these first 3 weeks that he is the guy. Despite the beating he took against Georgia, he bounced back so well against Eastern Washington with the five touchdown throwing game, five total again this week. He has just looked fantastic, and I am really excited to see what he can do against Pac-12 play, Nick. But I know you are going to have other players of the game as well. It can't just be the one. Nick's an incredible ball game, but there are also other guys worth mentioning.
Well, first for me, Brandon Dorlus stands out. I mean, you know,
the next on my list as well.
Well, yeah, the interior defensive line and right there on the edge. I mean, it was an entirely different ball game having a quarterback that, you know, could really move versus, you know, Eastern Washington, where there was definitely limited mobility there. But we did a fantastic job of staying in passing lanes, of being able to just, you know, especially with a quarterback that's trying to pull and run it, just being able to get back, maintain, and then even a few times in the run game, being able to slip underneath blocks and absolutely devastate. It just unsettled BYU's offense the entire day.
It absolutely did. I mean, Brandon Dorlus, seven tackles. He had a half a sack, 1.5 tackles for loss, including a huge one late in that game on a fourth down when it really, really mattered. The other half a sack, Jordan Riley, he got credit for the other half of that Dorlus work. And that was really on the first drive of the game. It was so impressive because that first drive, BYU gets the ball. Immediately, they hit a big play, right? Torzik Bridges just gets turned around a little bit. All of a sudden, BYU is on the Oregon side of the field and moving. But after that, the response from the Oregon defense was fantastic. Seeing Riley get the sack with Dorlus' help coming around the outside edge there, seeing the way the defense was able to hold up, get a fourth down stop, I can tell you from where we were sitting, section 15, row 10, excited as could be, looking across the field at that play, we knew in that moment, we being myself, my buddy Leland who came to the game, the Oregon fans around us, the BYU fans in front of us, everybody knew in that moment what kind of a day it was going to be due to that response from the Oregon defense. It was fantastic to see from them.
All right, so I know you've got other players of the game. I'm just going to throw a guess out for the next one.
Yes.
Bucky Irving.
Bucky Irving is on this list. He is number three on this list for a reason. Nick, you've hit my top three in a row already. Nix, Dorlus, Bucky Irving. Oh my goodness. Let's just put it this way. Bucky can ball. Simple as that. Get it trending right now. Maybe the first couple weeks we were sitting here going, man, the transfers are getting a lot of runs here. And when we said it ourselves, our running back distribution looks like Bucky Irving's earned him. Bucky Irving has absolutely earned him. The first play he gets the handoff onto the game, the very first, he has a beautiful little cutback, gets around two players, able to pick up a first down. And then after that, the second run of the game, the one that we all saw almost break the play into the end zone, getting all the way down there. Just a fantastic design, Great job by the polling guard to take out two linebackers. Montavio gets in the hole, clears out another one, and oh, just broken tackle city from there for Irving all the way down into the two. The work he was able to do on that drive, and I mean this, that drive, the third drive when he came back in, and then the start of the second half, created those Bo Nix touchdowns. The ability to draw the defense the way he was opened up so many lanes. I'm willing to give credit, a lot of credit, on those Nix touchdowns to the work Irving did earlier in the game.
Yeah, absolutely. Makes a lot of sense. And, you know, I'm not going to say you're predictable, but I think I've got at least six of your seven figured out, okay?
Let's see.
All right. Going in order. You got to go with the guy who's got the two passing touchdowns right there. Only tight end in the country with four touchdowns right now and two in two games. It's got to be Terrence, Terrence the Big Yak Ferguson.
Man, Nick, you are 4-4-4 right now. You are 4-4-4. You are my favorite meal at Wendy's this moment, buddy. I am telling you, you are knocking this out of the park. Terrence Ferguson, we've said it. I'll say it again. The best tight end prospect we have seen at Oregon since Ed Dixon. This guy can block. I saw him have an absolute nasty pancake block this week when I was reviewing film. We'll have a clip of that up on Friday when we post everything, because right now I will clip this moment just so I can show people that pancake block by Terrence Ferguson. Also, two touchdown catches, being able to make things happen for this offense. He is just so incredibly dangerous. He had two catches against BYU and they were both touchdowns. He was just in the right place at the right time, shedding people off of him, making them miss. Just fantastic work from him.
Okay, it's going to get tricky down here, but I got to go with follow that up with Little Yak, the guy who's really established himself as our number one wide receiver, and the highlight catch of the game, right down as I'm in the tunnel, Troy Franklin right there, man. That was some melts with the DB dangling right over him. So am I right?
5-4-5. Troy Franklin, Troy yards after catch Franklin was fantastic. He had three grabs for 84 yards, but I mean, the one grab is the one we're all concerned about. That 50 yard completion from Nix. The ball, was it a little behind him? Yeah. Was it a little high? Yeah. Did he still make an incredible catch that I don't know why it wasn't featured on ESPN SportsCenter top 10? Absolutely, he did. A fantastic play, a fantastic grab. Franklin has 100% set himself as the number one receiver on this team. He is fast. He is smart. He is agile. He makes the plays Oregon needs him to make. He did that again on Saturday.
Okay.
This is where it's going to get tough. I'm not going to lie.
And I'm going to make it extra dramatic and just try and go for it all in one swoop and tell you my honorable mention that makes me a little bit uncomfortable. So right there on the cusp, I'm thinking, it's hard because I'm just knowing you, he might be in there, but just with being able to securely take a 5-yard penalty and still know we're going to make a field goal, my honorable mention goes to Camden Lewis. And then the tough thing is going to be number 7 has to be somebody from the linebacker core, but it depends on that rewatch on who you're watching, or Christian Gonzalez. One of those in the 6 and 7 spot is what I'm feeling with, but I'm going to go with Gonzo in the 6th spot, and then number 7. But Noah Sewell had a great game that didn't show up on the stats, but the guy that showed up to me is Keith Brown. And that's what I'm going with.
You know, Nick, you went 5-for-5, and that was very, very good. You listed the three guys that made up the rest of my top 10, but I do have two other guys in there. But first, we will mention the guys that you said. First off, Sewell, absolutely. He did have probably the best game you could have without it showing up on the stat sheet. Yeah. He filled every single place where BYU wanted to go and forced him to go somewhere else. And every single time that wasn't the case, it was because BYU was scheming away from him. It was one of the two options. A lot this year, I've heard people ask, what's up with Sewell? Why haven't we seen Sewell doing as... Sewell's doing just as much. People are just avoiding it. People are saying, hey, number one, let's not go that way. Let's keep this away from him. And also, he's preventing number one options all over the field. He has been playing really, really good football. There's a reason his number is up 3 times behind me. You know what? Let's give one of those to Chris Hudson. That doesn't feel fair. But two of those, at least. are going to Sewell. Keith Brown, another one who played really, really good football, stepped up and made a couple of big tackles, but also had a couple of moments in coverage that I wasn't quite sure he had in him, but he showed up big time in those moments.
Especially with no Justin really Flo.
Exactly, especially with no Flo. Gonzo, another one, Christian Gonzalez, played some very good football, had a couple of big breakups. He looked solid, but he's also an all Pac-12 guy. Christian Gonzalez, I expect to see Christian Gonzalez show up. He did. That was fantastic. And of course, Camden Lewis, you knew he had the confidence to knock that in. This isn't the Camden Lewis of 2019. This is the Camden Lewis of 2022. This guy is an absolute killer. But Nick, I'll tell you the two players that I also have on this top seven, all right? Number six, the freshman. I'm going with Jordan James.
James,
6 carries, 33 yards. He had a catch as well for 6. How many of those plays were on fourth down or on third down and short when it wasn't a sneak from the quarterback, which we'll get into how much I love Oregon being under center for QB sneaks in just a little bit. But seeing Jordan James out there, the freshman, played high school football last year, seeing him be the one to get that ball on fourth down and 1 from the 31-yard line, their own 31-yard line, seeing that freshman get that ball, absolutely fantastic work from him. Again, 33 yards on 6 carries, just doing enough every single time. Each one of those carries was exactly what it needed to be. And that's what I love to see, especially from a freshman. The last player that I'm going to mention, this is one that might surprise you because he only had 1 catch, but it wasn't what he did catching the ball that really stuck out to me. Do you know who I'm going to say?
McCormick?
Maliki Matavao.
Ah, could be.
If you go back and watch this game, the tight end who is lining up in the backfield the most, the tight end pulling the most, the tight end being a lead blocker the most, Matavao. And he did such a good job several times, sealed on the second level, got up there, made a play, kept a linebacker away from a back. The reason Irvin was able to make a couple of runs last long, the reason Whittington was as well, Matavao getting in there and blocking. And then the one time he was thrown the ball, the beautiful pattern he made, they put the linebacker in a position of having to decide between him, the running back, linebacker hesitated, Knicks threw a dart. Matavao caught it, picked up yards, got out of bounds. Just fantastic work from him. Catching the ball, yeah, sure, doing what he was supposed to do there. But every single time he was asked to block, whether it was an end, whether it was double teaming on an interior lineman, whether it was a linebacker or a safety, he knocked it out of the park. Fantastic work from him.
And it's just, you know, I mean, I think we kind of expected it from our linebacker room to have that stronger performance this season and be that, you know, huge part of our team. But from our tight ends consistently across the board, you know, what they've been really, really impressive and one of the most impressive position groups on our team for sure. On that note, I mean, overall, the reason we have so many players to mention is because this team has improved so much week to week, and especially in terms of scheming. The coaches absolutely are the overall MVP this week. I mean, like you said, getting under center, especially in quick, short yarded situations and not hesitating. Have a quarterback that knows to get under, get the yards, trust your veteran offensive line, especially your center and guards who are going to get you easy, short yarded situations. And then not only getting under center, but the formations that we threw at BYU. BYU considering themselves a power football team and a mature and aggressive team, and we're out there bringing an extra offensive lineman into the game to just run it right at them. Oregon could have done a lot, and that especially like we tried to do against Georgia earlier this season, tried to spread them out and beat them with our speed, and instead we said, BYU, we're going to beat you at your own game, and honestly, you're not going to have anything to do about it until we're going to, you know, start easing things up in the second half after we have already built up a multiple score lead and held you at just 7 points. So, I mean, it was insane. I don't think any of us was expecting it to go exactly that way, but I did see us pulling it out, you know, essentially, you know, I had 1 score behind, but man, I don't think anybody predicted them to just come out and execute the exact game plan that they did, because it felt a lot like Oregon's, you know, advantage would be to the outside and, you know, getting scores fast, but we actually controlled the clock and the tempo of that football game almost entirely.
Oregon controlled that game. They, the simply put, BYU looked like they were on skates almost all game. It was Oregon was stronger, but also faster. It was such a combination of both. And like you said, I would have expected Oregon to try to get around the outside a little bit, be able to utilize the edges. But what was so fantastic to see from this team, and something that I think Oregon fans have seen at or seen Oregon do this at their very best always, whether it was that 2010 team that just got awarded this Hall of Fame the placards, whether it was 12, 14, 19, all these big teams, all these great years for Oregon. One defining factor was that Oregon could be fast while being strong. It was this idea that we can run right up the middle and still race past everybody. We can be stronger at the point of attack, and we can also beat you once we're in the second level. And we saw that all game long for this Oregon team.
Yeah, we saw a lot of distribution in the backfield, especially with Cardwell being out for the game. Everybody else picked up the slack, you know, Knicks included. It was really, I don't know, man, especially being there in person and then watching it again on tape. You finally are seeing what this coaching staff's kind of strategy is going into the season, and the team really, really is buying in, I believe. And that's some that will definitely be tested on the road this week. You know, Lanning still needs to pick up that first true road win, but it was a special day overall. And I do want to give a shout out to BYU and former Duck Kingsley Suamataia, or Suamataia. I'm sorry, I know I'm mispronunciating that, but coming out with the Spencer Webb flag was an absolutely classy move. And, you know, always wishing former Ducks of any tenure at Oregon the best in their careers and their future. But yeah, that was a great gesture from them and their fan base. And, you know, that they were, every single BYU fan I met there was incredible, really good fans and positive attitude. And it's what we love in Autzen Stadium. So even though, you know, it was probably a very hard day for them, you know, there's a lot of fan bases that wouldn't have taken that as well. And they were still pretty loud, even going into that third quarter there for a bit.
Well, Nick, I told you, credit to BYU. They showed out, absolutely. They really, really came together. Like, I don't think I've seen a road appearance at Autzen like that probably since Nebraska 2017, for a time where I remember that much of an opponent, especially from that far away, even though Provo is not that terribly far. Just seeing somebody from out of conference bring that type of fan base, that type of energy, it was really, really impressive. And credit to BYU fans. They showed up. They were loud. If you go back and watch the game, it's loud always. That means that Oregon fans are loud. That means that BYU fans are loud, both doing their jobs. It was a very fun atmosphere. It was hostile. It was what everybody said Autzen historically was, historically has been, historically will be. And you know what? It was a very, very exciting and fun day for Oregon football. And I think that was a game that it was big for this coaching staff. It was really big for this coaching staff to get a win against an experienced team, against another experienced coaching staff, to deal with some difficulties throughout that process, even though they were able to get the win. Whether that means you find out what shout really means and what kind of rules you have to have around that, whether it means finding out whether or not it is or isn't a good time to put in your backup quarterback, all these type of things were learned, and they were learned in a way that benefited this team without causing any real harm. A great learning day for the coaching staff, a great day to build on for this Ducks team.
Well, and a great way to wrap up non-conference. You know, ideally, you want exactly that. You want one incredibly almost outmatching you opponent to really test yourself against. You want one of those kind of easier pickup tune-up games. And then you want some that's a bit of a test. And honestly, BYU, I think, you know, really was more of a test than they were able to show on the field. But again, I think I knew it as soon as I saw them, you know, really celebrating the BYU win with the over Baylor, with it, you know, rushing the field, multiple overtimes, jumping up and down. And it just reminded me of multiple times where Oregon's been in this situation, like 2018 UW. We rush the field, everybody's excited, and the next week, what happens, Sam? We go out and, you know, you have a hangover. And the big test I'm excited to see with this team, and, you know, it wasn't as close a game. It wasn't rushing the field, but you have to feel pretty good about yourself as a team after a win like that. So how does this team respond going into Pac-12 play and especially going on the road?
Well, you know, Nick, that's going to be a difficult challenge for this team in this club, but I do think that something that I said before the first game of the year, before this Georgia game. It was about this Oregon team feeling as if they should be in these moments. Now, Georgia's moment didn't go well, and that's fine, and everybody realizes that, and they've grown and moved on from that, and they've proven it. But I think that this is the type of team that, and perhaps I'm wrong about this one too, but I think that they are more prepared for winning the big game and how to bounce off of that, how to come back from that. I think BYU upsetting a higher-ranked Baylor team in their house, that's a huge step for that program. That's a huge, massive moment. For Oregon, getting a win over a top 12 team, that's big, but a lot of the guys on this roster have done that. A lot of guys on this roster have been there or have at least expected to be there. So do I think Oregon will have the same difficulty BYU did after having that type of a dramatic win? Maybe, but I lean toward maybe not. I lean toward this team coming in a bit more level-headed, a bit more prepared to play a football game. Whether that means it'll translate or not, we'll have to find out. But I have a harder time seeing that being an exact issue. I remember coming back up from the Eastern Washington game, watching that BYU-Baylor game in the car, and knowing the minute it ended, that's in our favor. That leans toward Oregon. That win for Baylor leans Oregon's way. I don't think Washington State watches that game, Oregon against BYU, and says, oh, this leans our way. I think they look at that game and go, this is a team that proved to themselves what they can do, and that might be scary.
Yeah, well, this is also a team that was able to go on the road into Wisconsin and pick up a win, which they aren't getting any credit for, or else this would be another ranked matchup. But honestly, the thing that also I think some fans are talking about that, you know, there's always that chance when you're in Pullman, some weird happens. I experienced it on my one trip up there. Sometimes, you know, injuries happen, weird injuries. And we had them on the offensive line and at the quarterback position that day. But I know a lot of people coming out of this game were a little bit concerned with Ty Thompson. But when I reviewed the tape, honestly, I thought, you know, there was the one, swing pass fumble. That's probably on him. He probably needs to make sure that's a forward pass or just not throw it. Otherwise, I thought he had a really good day for the opportunities he was given. And if you want to make mistakes out there that you can correct, that's a great opportunity to do it. I thought the one interception, definitely not on him. I thought that was a great ball that should have been pulled down. You know, what was that, Dante Thornton? Can't remember, but I remember if the receiver is just able to bring that one in, I think it's good. And then there's one other incompletion. I think it was on a free play. And those are opportunities to make mistakes. And honestly, I thought other than that, he managed the offense pretty well. I think situationally, there's a lot we could learn to improve from the end of that game. But I've heard some people that are a little concerned with the backup quarterback position. And I couldn't feel any more different about it after what we've seen.
You know, I feel very confident saying, okay, Ty has one turnover in that game. Whether it was the turnover that he did have versus the one he was supposed to have, that's different. Yeah. I completely agree. The interception was not on him. That was on the receiver. It hit your hands. At this level of college football, if it hits your hands, it's a catch. It's probably how it should be. Now, that swing pass was his first play in the game, I believe. And it looked like it was his first play in the game against the number 12 team in the country. Just from having reviewed that play, not only was it a backwards pass, not only was it a swing pass toward a very loaded side of the field for BYU, it was also kind of high and behind. It was pretty much where you wouldn't want to put it, that to be true. But Oregon was able to bounce back from that in terms of the team. Of course, they had to punt away on that drive. They had to punt away on the next one as well. But he had moments that I think were positive for sure. He had a pass along the sideline to Hudson that I thought should have been caught. Wasn't. It was a pretty fantastic throw. Fast on the move out to the right side. He had moments that were positive, but again, this was a game where I felt confident saying, given what I've seen here, things are lined up and ordered the absolute way they should be. This feels like it's set up depth chart wise in a very interesting way. But I think Oregon this year has proved that they're willing to go deep into that depth chart. They're willing to mess around with it. I understand a quarterback's position where generally you will keep the same guy in there as you should, but Oregon has proven their willingness to lean into their depth a little bit, whether on the defensive line, whether the linebacking core, which, by the way, a guy who we didn't mention earlier who absolutely should have been in that linebacking core, Jeffrey Bassa, loves contact. Yeah. Love that about him. Or it's that secondary, or it's the offensive line. Oregon's willing to use their bodies, and I don't think that's a bad thing at all.
No, and speaking of bodies, it was damn good to see walk back and able to utilize, you know, those guys that have gotten those reps and Connerly getting out there in different formations. I mean, the offensive line, man, you know, as a former O-line guy myself, they've been really impressive. And, you know, knock on wood, being one of the only teams in the country, one of three that has played three games and has not given up a sack. Now, a lot of that is on offensive coordinator and Bo Nix and being in sync and knowing when you need to tuck it and run and when you need to get rid of the ball safely. But, I mean, they've done a fantastic job of being able to get this offensive line group, and that goes all the way to, you know, new offensive line coach, Coach Clem. I mean, those guys are really covering people up, and you could see it on a lot of those Irving runs especially. You know, guys aren't going to be able to get arm tackles because they're going to get pancaked into the ground as soon as they reach out with that one arm.
Well, Nick, you were watching as close as anybody. I tried to keep up with it. I watched a lot of the film on earlier. Did I count 7 offensive linemen that are regularly in rotation for this Oregon team?
Yeah.
7 right?
7, well, technically 8. Because, if you know, Jackson Powers, yep, Johnson, you got Marcus Harper, and then you've got Connerly. Those are, I think, are your rotation guys. You get in there, and then the starting 5 we've seen. But right now, you know, Steven Jackson hurt. Hopefully we can get his body back in there here pretty soon this season. But, you know, they're being smart, not saying much about injuries. But, you know, I think if we could get him back this week, that'd be nice. And even if not, it's been great to see them be able to really work out that depth and see different guys in tandem together.
Well, and I'll tell you, the more I watched that game for Oregon against BYU, the more I was impressed with the left side of that offensive line. The push that they were able to get on almost every single play was so fantastic. I'll tell you, Nick, when I was reviewing film this morning, I was sending videos back and forth with my uncle. My uncle lives in France now, played football back in the day, played for Eastern Oregon back when they had a university, the university had a team. He played in a couple of international ordeals, but what's fun, and I like to be able to send him, is I love going back and forth with that lineman work with him. He played guard. He played nose tackle. I like hearing his opinion on these things. That is when you're not willing to pick up the phone yourself. And the thing that he kept emphasizing every video I sent him, every clip that we talked about, was, man, the initial push that these guys get is just unbelievable. 2 yards, 3 yards, almost every single play. Just fantastic work. And we were focusing on that left side. We were seeing the work that they were doing. But across the line in general, the type of work Oregon has been doing, especially on these third down, fourth down situations, just so impressive. And to see 7, 8 guys deep be able to have the same level of success moving as one unit, as you like to tell us, nothing better.
Nothing better. And, you know, especially in those short yardage situations where, you know, the key is, honestly, you don't even need a snap count. As soon as that center moves the ball, we're all just hauling ass down the field and trying to get as many yards as we can in a pile. And we're going to need that. We're going to need to be able to utilize that this week going into Wazoo, and getting off the ball on the right, you know, right snap count is going to be insanely important in a loud environment, just like Martin Stadium.
Oh, it's going to be a very difficult place to play. Oregon has played in a couple of hostile environments already this year. Playing at Georgia couldn't have been easy, as big and as cavernous as that building is. A couple of loud ones at Autzen. But now being the road team, a true road game, if you will, it says at on the schedule technically for the first time all year. It's going to be one heck of a challenge. And it's going to be a challenge I'm very excited for this Oregon team to face. I think that the final wraps we can put on the BYU game, Nick, just an impressive performance. I think BYU offensively, I think maybe they were even able to do just about what we said. I know that you had said 24, correct? I had said 31, maybe take away a score if the receivers didn't play. Receivers didn't play, I'll take away a score from that. We both predicted their kicker would make that field goal he missed. Oh, well. Beyond that, I think that we kind of would have seen BYU's offense kind of doing what they did, but Oregon's offense really even outpacing what we had expected from them. Loved seeing it. Loved seeing the work all around from these Ducks.
Well, and even though the schedule said BYU last week and it says Wazoo this week, the important thing is the biggest opponent Oregon had was Oregon. And if that continues to be the case, I think we'll be just fine. But you never know until you see it. And we've seen teams that go up there and have a pretty hard time adjusting, you know. But I'm excited to talk to our next guest a little bit about what that experience is like, what he expects to see from this team. But before we get to that, one little bit of trivia. Do you know the last time Oregon faced back-to-back games against the same exact mascot, in this case, the Cougar? Give you a hint, Sam. It was back when I played.
Back when you played. Yeah. Well, Nick, I have a guess, but I think I should let you tell the people the answer for sure.
I mean, I think, looking back, and correct me, please, in the comments if I'm wrong. Now, it wasn't the same season, but going from the national title game against the Auburn Tigers and then going into play Texas Stadium against the LSU Tigers, that's the last time this Oregon fan base has had to experience the back-to-back mascots. So, you know, the kind of information you only find on Once a Duck that could win you some bar trivia someday.
Well, you know, Oregon, last time they had to play two opponents with the same name in a row, 0-2 in those ball games so far with the Cougar back-to-back. 1-0 thus far. I think that they might be able to push it to 2, but that's all coming up in the next segment. Before that, though, we have a guest. He's played a couple of games up at Washington State. One of the most sobering Oregon games I think I can remember, let's put it that way. The next, an empty stadium game in which he played very, very well. I think this guest, a lot of people know him and a lot of people follow him. And I think that he's definitely one that I'm excited we were able to get on here.
Yes, sir. Former Oregon safety, Nick Pickett. All right. With us this week, a very special Duck and Rose Bowl champion, former safety, Nick Pickett. Nick, thank you for joining us. One thing I'm really excited to talk to you about before we talk about your time at Oregon is you've become one of the more outspoken Oregon Ducks on Twitter, and I love it. I love to see, you know, when you're educating people out there about football that really don't know what they're talking about. You know, what has been a part of that decision for you ever since, you know, you stopped playing at Oregon to kind of go back and at least interact with the fans that way?
I mean, it's always been a part of me ever since I was a recruit. I've had times where I was really big on, I've always been on Twitter just in general. So when I was a recruit and I finally committed, there's been a lot of times where I was arguing with Oregon State fans at the time back in like 2017. But then it cooled down when I got to, when I actually got to school, my coaches told me to cool down for a bit, whatever. So I just listened to them, respected their decisions as far as that. But I've always been active on Twitter, like especially trying to back my friends that play on the team that get a lot of hate or whatever just for the common mistakes that they make in the field. So I've always been that type of guy to try to defend them whenever I could. But especially now, I just feel like since I don't go there and there's nobody that can tell me, oh, you can't say this or you can't say that. It's not like I'm saying outrageous stuff, but I definitely feel like I should have a part in sticking up for my friends at least, and especially for the program.
Well, Nick, I know that I appreciate hearing from you and seeing you on Twitter. You have a lot of takes that especially I agree with and that I love to see being promoted. A question I had for you first and foremost out of the gate, you were a part of a really important recruiting class at Oregon. You were a part of that 2017 class that committed to Oregon when there was a lot of turmoil, the first real coaching turnover in what had been decades for the program. Before you even talk about your time at Oregon, what was that process like of being recruited by Oregon, seeing that coaching change, and what made you decide that Oregon was going to be the place for you?
I've always wanted to go to Oregon since I was a young kid. Just looking up to D'Anthony Thomas at the time, he was from the same area as me in L.A. So I used to practice at his high school sometimes and actually see him play high school games. And to see him go to Oregon, it was just a big eye-opener for the uniforms and all that. But when I started getting recruited, I had put them in my top five without actually having an offer for them. From them, just having like common interest from them, talking to the coaches, Coach Neal, for example, he was a DB coach. So I just always like, I don't know, I always just wanted to go to Oregon as long as it fit. It was a perfect, fine fit for me, and it turned out to be. So like in high school, when I committed, I got offered in high school during the season, and I committed the week after I took an official visit, like Halloween weekend. I think it was when Herb, when they played ASU that weekend, Herb had like 400 yards or something, 300 yards or something crazy. But they ended up getting fired. And I remember Coach Neal and a couple of coaches texting all the recruits, like saying what was going on. So we all made a group chat, like aside from everything, and just me and a couple other guys just saying how we would stick together and really take pride in turning the program around.
Yeah, and you were a part of a key core group of guys that did not just turn the program around, but had to face a lot of transition, not just with Coach Taggart coming in, but, you know, with his quick transition out. What really was the bond that kept that core group of guys together, and how did you guys really pull through and, you know, at the end of your tenure there, end up kind of peaking right at the Rose Bowl?
I remember being in a locker room one time. Forget what game it was. I remember it was at halftime. I was talking to Troy Dye. We were talking about the actual game. And he was like, at some point, we just got to learn how to play for each other. Like, although the coaches are here and they're telling us what to do, we have to play for each other. We're all brothers. You have to learn how to just back off each other and encourage each other and just go hard out there and when we're out there. So that was an eye-opener for me. I don't know about everybody else, but we started to come together, especially that 2019 year. We had guys that's been there for a few years, a couple of hungry younger dudes that knew what we were trying to get together, were actually formed at the time, and it just took off from there.
Nick, over the progression of your career at Oregon, every single year seemed to get a little bit better or get a little bit more exciting. Obviously, 2020 was its own year with COVID and everything, and that was all kind of crazy. But being in that locker room every year and feeling that group come together more, get better together, what would you say the real energy was going from one year to another? And could you feel that escalation building inside the locker room?
Oh, yeah, for sure. The coaching change actually helped us in a lot of ways, clearly, because we won. But actually changed our mindset as far as what winning feels like and what we should be able to go out and chase when we're playing. And the energy in the locker room, it just I can't really explain. It was like everybody had the common goal, and we all executed the common goal at the end of the day and wanted to keep going. Winning is living, is that my old coaches would like to say. But that's what we were just chasing W's and getting victories and advancing. It was, and then when Coach Phil came, he had a saying called "Take the Pack." We haven't won a Pac-12 championship. I don't, like, at that time, I don't think anybody on the team has had a Pac-12 championship. So we're real hungry to see what that felt like. So that's what drove us the whole offseason and during the season.
Yeah, and there were a lot of ups and downs on the way to that Pac-12 championship, all the back-to-back Pac-12 championships. The one in particular that stands out this week, obviously, was that trip. Game days up there, Gardner Minshew's ready to go. And yeah. Washington State just comes out, and it felt like from the very get-go, it was their day to shine. What was that day like, and what advice would you give to this week's team going up to Pullman?
That day was crazy. I remember prior to that, I think we played them home my freshman year, and then it was my first time playing away. So the older guys always tell me, like, man, their fans are crazy. Like, they throw things at you on the field, and they talk so much, like, just to get in your head. Even the announcer's crazy. Like, he talks so much. You can hear him, like, chirping in the background after they score and stuff. But leading up to that game, we just knew it was really, like, a defining moment for the Oregon football team. I guess, before in the past, I didn't know that was really where the game, you can say determines how well Oregon would do in the Pac-12, I guess you could say, because they're usually known for having one of the top 10 passing teams in the conference or in the nation in general, and their defense has always been pretty good. So it was really like a shaping game to see where we're going to be throughout the season. But my best advice for these guys this week is to just play their own game. It's just as much as any other game, but this game is going to have a lot of outside noise. And I know it's like cliche to say block out the outside noise, but that's something you really have to do out there, because it can get to you. When it gets to you, they start getting on a roll and players start to pile up. But I think they have a good chance this week just to stay focused and play their game.
Nick, speaking of trips up to Pullman, you made one in 2020. You yourself had a really good ball game that day, led the team with 9 tackles. That entire season, though, you guys played in empty buildings, played through a lot of difficult circumstances. What does that 2020 season look like to you, and what was it like to be playing Division I college football with nobody in the building?
Man, it was weird. I'm not going to lie. It was real weird. We would run out. Like, it was like, imagine just running out a stadium tunnel with you looking, and it was just cardboard box cut-ups of fans throwing their hands up. Like, It's weird. Fake cheering. Like, I ain't gonna lie though, when we played USC in the Pac-12 championship, they had like the fake audio for the fans. It started to sound real at one point. I'm like, the hell? Start looking around, but usually, yeah, them games, it was like a scrimmage. It felt like we'll be in the middle of the game. I'll be like, bro, I feel like we're at practice right now, even though we're on TV and everybody's watching at home. But the environment was completely different. I don't really know how to explain it. It was weird though. I didn't really like it, but you gotta do what you gotta do.
Yeah, after the COVID year, you weren't able to, you know, unfortunately get drafted. A lot of us wanted to see you go on and have a lot of success, but you were picked up, signed by the Lions. Can you tell us a little bit about what your time like was professionally and what you're trying to do now?
Well, I only got a tryout with the Lions, but I had a very good time while I was there for that that weekend. Learned a lot of new people and a lot of new coaches, and learned a lot in general, just football-wise. So that was good, and I actually got the opportunity to go to the CFL. I played for the Edmonton Elks for a little bit. I signed with them. I did their training camp process, whatever. I went back home, but right now I'm planning on finishing up my degree. And I still want to go to the NFL, but a big goal for me, and I told some of the coaches back when I was in school that I want to become a coach. My dad's a coach. My uncle's a coach. So I think that's like in my bloodline. I just enjoy being around the game of football a lot.
Well, I can tell you, I'm certainly looking forward to seeing what Coach Pickett has in store. I'm definitely, as an Oregon fan and as a fan of yourself, Nick, I look forward to seeing what that looks like. One thing that I love about your career and your presence at Oregon was there are so many pictures, videos, moments from Oregon locker rooms where you see success, where you see these players excited and celebrating. You're always at the core of those moments, it seems like. You're there dancing with coaches. You're there throwing water around. What did it mean to you personally to be a part of those moments? And did you see yourself as kind of a big piece of that locker room and a big piece of those celebratory moments?
Man, like I said before, it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience, opportunity. I always wanted to go to Oregon. So I'm like, whenever the camera's on, I'm going to make the most of my opportunity, whether it's trying to perform on the field or dancing in the locker room. Just enjoying the moment, living in the moment, enjoying what's around me. We had a lot of great moments at Oregon that, you know, college, like they always say, college go by fast. When you're done with it, you're going to miss it. So I just tried to do as much as I could and have fun with my friends while I was there.
Yeah, and you definitely had a lot of highlights, a lot of big highlight plays. But what's something behind the scenes that was a huge highlight for you that nobody got to see that will still stick out to you beyond, you know, your playing days?
Does it involve football or just in general?
Anything with University of Oregon, Eugene, anything that sticks with you?
I don't know. It's a lot of eye openers when you go to Oregon. It'll shape your life. It'll change your perspective on life a lot. But football wise, I have to say, getting my first start versus Nebraska my freshman year, I got to play the first game against Southern Utah, and like I didn't start, but I played a long time. I got in like the middle of the first quarter and played the rest of the game or something like that. But actually being able to see my name, or the announcer saying my name during the game, before the game, or on the bus ride, on the way to the stadium, I start crying. Just like, damn, I really made it. Like, you know, I'm young, 17 at the time. It's what I dreamt of. And I'm playing a team like Nebraska. I know the year before that, they lost to them. And they have like sort of a rivalry for them 2 years. So I was like, man, it's a big moment in my life, a big step in, big steps to it on a bigger thing. So I'll say that was really one of those feelings.
Well, Nick, I can tell you, ironically or fittingly enough, I should say, that Nebraska game was my first game in the student section at Oregon. I came in 2017 that same year. And I can tell you that throughout that time, obviously, everybody grows in college. Everybody learns in college. But after having graduated, after being at Oregon, I know exactly why I would tell somebody they should go to Oregon, why they should be there. How would you sell somebody, whether they're a student, a football player, whoever they might be, why should you go to Oregon?
You should, if you were thinking about going to Oregon, you should definitely go to Oregon because it's just flat out different. It's different. It's nothing you would expect from a university. I should say, because I visited a lot of different universities and they're pretty lively in their own type of way. But Oregon is like a home away from home. There's many different activities for you to do as far as hiking. I know it's like out the norm for some. Most people like me, it took me a couple years to do stuff outdoors really up until COVID happened, and we didn't have much to do, a lot of downtime, but it's a real good experience just being outdoors, going to different lakes, exploring what Oregon has to offer, because it's really nature-like. So I think it's good. It'll open up a different side of you that you didn't know you had, and it opens up a lot of opportunities as well, as far as, like, you know, obviously you have Nike, so if you get to get yourself communicate with other people, it's just a lot of opportunities that they have to offer.
Yeah, and as we wind down, I want to talk about a little more about what you see in this team and this program now. With Coach Lanning taking over and a defensive mindset, with, even as I learned this past weekend visiting, you know, now the defensive, you know, and offensive meeting rooms have been swapped. How do you feel about the program kind of taking a more emphasis on the defensive side of the ball? And do you take pride in that as a former defensive player yourself?
Well, yeah, for sure. I think that's a big deal for football, because usually, I mean, that's pretty much known, but Oregon is known. It's mainly known for the offensive presence, and every head coach that we've had, or at least every head coach that we had in the past and the ones that I've had were always offensive based. So when I was there, we had a good defense in like the last 3 years, but to actually have a coach that focused mainly on defense, is really the defensive power person, is really going to change the mindset for the defensive guys in general and the team as a whole. I think that's the biggest factor for them in general, just having a good mindset and what they need to accomplish. But having a defensive head coach really changes everything.
Nick, the last one I got for you before we try to get you out of here. And I would love to avoid this question. I can never avoid it. It's the one I ask almost every former Duck. They're hanging up behind me. I grew up an Oregon fan. I love the uniforms. I'm into it just as much as anybody else. Was there something that particularly stuck out to you? You were standing in the locker room. You just thought, man, this looks fantastic. Or is there one you look back on and just go, man, that was the best look we had?
It's a couple, like the one in the Nebraska game that I first started in, that was a cool one. It's a cool story behind that, like the Dornberger children helped design it or whatever. While I was there, we had a Jordan one. That was big to me, because I've never, like, a Jordan collab just for Oregon, with an actual uniform. I know we get Jordans every year, but we actually got our own uni. That was cool. And, man, it's a lot, to be honest with you. Like, last year, I liked the one behind you on the white one with the little specks of paint on it. That was real nice. I seen those the year before when I was there with the breast cancer one. And I think, like, the throwback Oregon uniform is cool, too. I like the Ohana ones, too. Those are different.
Well, and just like Sam, you can't just have one answer. You have to have a top 5 to 10 list. Right. Well, thank you for coming on with us, Nick. Appreciate it. And you know, it's great to hear that you're getting your education and going to pursue coaching. And we wish you the best of luck in that.
Oh yeah, appreciate that for sure. And thanks for having me.
Yep. And as always, once a duck, always a duck. Sure. Another great former Duck and another great interview. If you guys liked it, please let us know in the comments below, or you know, wherever you're watching or listening. And we will continue to bring you great guests. Let us know who you want to hear next. But I think for going into Washington State, it was a really good choice of interview, Sam. Good call.
Oh, thanks, Nick. We know Nick Pickett's a guy I got to see a lot during my time at Oregon. Always was a fun personality. Knew he was someone we'd want to have in here. And considering the last time Oregon played up in Pullman, he led the team in tackles. Felt just about right.
Yeah, and you know, gotta love having another Rose Bowl winner on the chat. It's always good to talk to some guys that have played in some big games, especially a few that we are at together. But talking about big games, Dan Lanning's first road test in the Pac-12 and first true road test, considering Lando's neutral site game. But Sam, we've had a lot of games against the Cougs before. I've only had one in Pullman, thankfully, but it's never an easy place to play. I think a lot of things that people overlook is that you usually fly in as a team into Moscow, Idaho, stay somewhere over there, and you know, the whole travel squad, everybody that's there, and all your equipment staff, everybody's got all experienced this, and it's a little bit weird. You have to change up your timing of your meetings and your travel time getting over to the stadium, and then even just back in my day, having the locker rooms they had, which was just basically the student rec center locker rooms, and you had to walk all the way over to the stadium, and fans were just waiting there to heckle you there on the sides. Great call. College town, great college environment for football, but man, it is a tough adjustment, especially especially used to playing in such big games like Oregon has two out of three games they have already this season.
Nick, I think this is going to be a very unique challenge for this Oregon team for a couple of reasons, but here's one that I'll give you that I haven't heard much, but I feel like is a very worthwhile thing to cover. This is the first time Dan Lanning and his staff have brought Oregon into a game where the opponent is familiar with Oregon. This Washington State team, whether it be players, whether it be the coaching staff, they've played the Oregon Ducks before. This coaching staff has coached against the Oregon Ducks before, and they did it in what was a pretty competitive game last year in Eugene. I think this is going to be the first time, I know this is the first time where an opponent doesn't just, like Georgia knew the schemes, Georgia knew the ideas, Georgia knew what Lanning wanted to do. Washington State knows these players. Washington State's played against these guys, and yes, Bo Nix and Bucky Irving, these are going to be new faces for them, but they also have had to deal with Brandon Dorlus before. They have had to defend an Oregon tight end room before. This is something that this team is more familiar with. I think it's going to be a very interesting challenge. I also think it's going to be an interesting challenge for Oregon to play in front of a crowd that's familiar with them, a crowd that doesn't like them. This one, it's the first time I think you can say this year for sure that Oregon's playing in a place where the team that's at home, their crowd is actively hard rooting against Oregon. Georgia's crowd is rooting for Georgia, wanted to see Dan Lanning do his thing a little bit. Washington State's rooting against Oregon, rooting for the Cougars, but rooting for the downfall of the Ducks.
Well, and importantly, they're 3-0. I mean, this is everything to them right now. They're coming in with a chip on their shoulder, unranked, not enough respect for the wins that they do have. And, you know, honestly, a defense that I think has been overlooked overall in the national picture of things, because especially from what I saw in the Wisconsin game, potentially if you don't go out there and perform, I mean, Wisconsin, there's plenty you can say about their passing game, and but their ability to finish off big play runs just wasn't there like you expect from a Wisconsin team, and a lot of that give credit to the Cougar defense.
This Washington State defense is one of the best we've seen in some time, Nick. I think that the coaching staff that was there at the beginning of last year, the year before that, they really brought a new defensive mentality to this team, and I think it's one that Dicker and his staff have maintained at Oregon with some relative success.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. And it, you know, you mentioned last year's game, but even going back to, you know, the Alex Grinch era of their defense, that always gave Oregon fits in situations, and there was always a lot of movement up front and a lot of things to adjust to. But if anything, going into this situation and having a veteran offensive line that's able to go out there, and especially with Alex Forsythe at center, getting everybody on the same page with the snap count is going to be huge in a loud and raucous environment like that.
One player that I would want everybody to look out for this Cougar team, and it's going to be, he's their defensive leader, the linebacker, number one. Deion Henley is an absolute beast for this Cougars team. He's got 30 total tackles so far this season. He's already got an interception. He's got 4 sacks, 2 forced fumbles. This guy is everywhere. He is one of, if not the best players on this defense, and it's by a long shot. The next closest player, tackles-wise, has 18. He has 12 more tackles than the next guy. He is everywhere on the field for this team. Also, Smith Wade, the corner, you don't want to put a ball anywhere near him. He's got an interception on the year. He's got a pass defended. He was their leader in interceptions last season. He is an absolute problem with that defensive unit. What they do so well is that they swarm to the ball. They are a fast unit. They will cause problems for this Oregon team to some level or another. We saw what they did against Wisconsin, holding a team like that to 14 points at home. I'll be very, very interested to see what this Oregon team can do on the road.
Yep. And on the offensive side of the football, you know, you mentioned this team being very familiar, but their quarterback, their offensive coordinator, some of those offensive weapons transferring in, and that starts right at the top with Cam Ward. And he hasn't quite been what I think a lot of people were expecting coming in. He's definitely not looked as comfortable out there as I think they were hoping for, but you never know. You don't want to be the team that lets that offense start clicking.
Well, Cameron Ward, he at Incarnate Ward, where he played his first couple of seasons before he transferred, he was a phenom. 6.908 in terms of yards, and that's over two seasons. In 2020 and 2021, 6,908 yards, 71 touchdowns. This dude was an absolute problem. Since coming to Washington State, maybe he hasn't done exactly what he has wanted to do, but he has been able to get them three wins. In that first game against Idaho, three touchdowns, no interceptions, 228 yards. Against Wisconsin, had two interceptions, had the game-winning touchdown as well, 17 of 28. And Ben against Colorado State, doing exactly what you would want him to do, four touchdowns, a pick, 299 yards in that game. He has just gotten, he's gotten better from the Wisconsin week against Colorado State. Obviously, it's going to be tough playing a Wisconsin team that has the experience they do, but he was able to get his team to a win there. And the thing, Nick, that I think causes the most problem, obviously, he's elusive, obviously, he's quick, he can do a lot of things, but he gets the ball out quick. Yeah. He gets the ball from the center to the receiver, to the running back, just about as quick as you would want. This is a guy, I stand by the fact, Mike Leach would have loved this guy if he was still up at Washington State, just because of how he's able to quickly get that ball out, get it to where it needs to go, get it to playmakers in space. I think he presents a very real problem just in his playmaking ability. 6'2", 220 pounds, got some size on him, got some strength. He'll be a very, very interesting player to watch for this Washington State team, but he's far from their only weapon on offense.
Well, yeah, and just in terms of, you know, coup grade offenses we've seen in the past, I think this is a lot more run orientated than we're used to seeing. As you already just, you know, read off those quarterback stats. Those aren't Mike Leach stats if your passing attempts aren't in the 40s. So I know a lot of Oregon fans are used to kind of getting a little nervous of getting our pass defense checked and tested as much as possible against a Wazoo team. But this is going to be a little bit of a different animal.
I think it really will be, and I think it all starts with the Wisconsin transfer. He had two touchdowns in that game against Wisco, against his former team. We're talking about the junior, Nakia Watson, 6 foot, 223 pounds. He is a great runner, and I think he will be a really, really solid back for this Washington State team. Obviously, when you're playing running back at Wisconsin, you're going to be behind a number of players. It's one of, if not the running back you, if we're really being honest. It's hard to get playing time there. But the minute he's gotten to Washington State, this season alone in three games, he's already had more yards than he had in the previous two seasons. He already has more catches than he had in his entire Wisconsin career. He has been very, very good for this team, and I'm very excited to see what he'll be able to do this weekend. So far on the year, 36 attempts, 224 yards, the touchdown. It was the long one we saw against Wisconsin. Looking forward to seeing what he is bringing to the table as well. But as Washington State often does, they do also have a really, really talented wide receiver, a really big, strong, talented guy in Donovan Ollie, 6'3", 212 pounds, just a sophomore, number six. That'll be a challenge for the Oregon secondary all day.
Yeah, well, at least in comparison to the previous Wazoo teams, at least it's only one. Because I know certainly in the Mike Leach era, there was a lot of those guys that were testing the defense. This season, he certainly seems to be the guy, a lot like our own offense, having one primary receiver and a couple other weapons underneath that we still need to kind of see, kind of prove themselves. But I'm excited for it. I know, I was glad I only had to play up there once, getting to play in Seattle was a lot preferable. I think we need to bring that kind of game back. I know Wazoo fans aren't all happy with that, and they love having it right there in Pullman. But I know a bunch of Cougs out in the Seattle area that can't make it down to every game, so maybe we could convince them maybe once out of every 4 years we have one of those right there at Lumen Field, because, man, that was a special game to play in. Getting to play in an NFL stadium is always a little different, but you know, up here in my home state, that was amazing. And I know it would be great for probably both teams in terms of recruiting and outreach. So if we could get that scheduled again, please, because I know lots of people that I saw at the game, and you know, our number one fan, Mike, has been trying to get me to go out to Pullman, and I'm still trying to get my voice back from last week. And I know it's only going to get worse if I were able to go again this week. And I still have just bad vibes from my one trip out there, even though we still won.
Well, Nick, it is difficult going out to Poland. I'll tell you, I have bad vibes from the time I went back in 2018 as well. That wasn't a phenomenal trip to have made. That game went so poorly. We drove back home directly afterwards. We thought we were going to spend a night in a hotel, and that didn't even happen. We just went right home. We weren't willing to deal with any of that at all. This Oregon team, though, they're going to have to play this Washington State team up in Pullman. You played in Pullman 2010. It was a tough game. It was a game that we saw Kenyon Barner go down with an injury. LaMichael carried a lot of the weight, and it cost Ed to step in. Then 2012, Kenyon Barner got his revenge against Washington State, really went off against them. I think he might end up being our cover for this episode, actually, just off of what he was able to do in that game against them. But I'll ask you this, Nick. Do you know the last time Oregon opened Pac-12 play in Pullman?
I always get this messed up, but it had to be the last national championship season. I always screw it up and say 2015, but that was the 2014 team.
You are absolutely right. A day highlighted by Devin Allen with a couple of touchdowns, Keenan Lowe with a touchdown. It was a big day for the Ducks, and it was an important game because I think it showed Oregon fans that year a few things. Number one, the offensive line was going to need help throughout the season, and we saw it improve as it did. I think Mariota took 7 or 8 sacks in that ball game. But I think right there is highlighted something that this Washington State team is able to do with Oregon quite a lot, and that's be able to create trouble up front. We saw them do it against Wisconsin. We've seen them do it against Oregon historically. I could see it happening again. This is a team that just causes problems with their defensive line. They really do find a way to do that to you. But, Nick, another follow-up for you. Do you know how many times in the last, let's say, 10 years, Oregon has played their first road Pac-12 game in Pullman?
Too many. Way too many.
It's been a weird coincidence. It's happened 3 or 4 times. It's been I think this is the fourth since that 2012 matchup that Oregon will be playing their first road game of the Pac-12 season up in Pullman. And that's a difficult trip for anybody to make. And I know that, Nick, this week, our Twitter question, it had to do with playing up in Pullman, what people were afraid to see. I figure now is as good a time as any to get into some of those answers. I know one of them involved staying away from Fireball, and having been up to Pullman, I can tell you, you should definitely try to stay away from the Fireball up there.
Well, first, Sam, once a duck is never afraid. We asked Oregon fans what they're concerned about most going into Pullman this weekend. We had a couple people that were actually pretty confident in their replies, but we had 48 different replies. So if we weren't able to get to you in this, I want to apologize, encourage you. Again, please reach out and continue to give us your feedback every time we put some up there, because it's just going to make this show better. But for, yeah, Fireball and whoever is opposite of Gonzo was at Robbie YFZ450's response. And I couldn't agree more. You've always on game day, you have to moderate your Fireball intake.
Well, Nick, I'm not sure if we'll put it out with this. I might post it with this. I might not. But there may or may not be video evidence of Fireball defeating me up in Pullman. If nothing else defeated me that day, Pullman, Garner Minshew and Fireball certainly did.
Oh my goodness, that will be one heck of an Oregon Duck extra. Be on the lookout for that. If and
once
when
a duck
goes
MVP,
up.
once a duck MVPs, that one's coming to you guys.
Oh man. Well, moving on. The Ducks' lack of pass rush needs to get better each and every week. Penix, Rising, Ward, etc. And that comes from at Cam K. Neal. And while I definitely, you know, agree that we want to land more sacks in terms of stats, I do want to point out that we were aggressive. We were making the pocket move. And you know, when you're able to dictate whether the quarterback is comfortable or not is much more important sometimes than getting all the way and landing a sack.
Well, we saw the work that Dorless, Riley, Johnson were able to do in that game against BYU. I think DJ Johnson had one of the most impressive plays of the game. Somehow, I don't think we even mentioned him in the first segment, although we definitely should have. He had a fantastic play where he came all the way. He was on the strong side, circled all the way around, got to the weak side, followed Hall, got around the entire pocket, was able to make a tackle after Hall was able to just get 2 or 3 yards, and a play that if Johnson wasn't able to get there, it was probable that he was going to be able to get to a first down. So I think that Oregon has been doing a good job keeping people uncomfortable, but I don't think it is at all wrong to say that in this Washington State game, sacks, tackles for loss will absolutely be at a premium on both sides.
Yep. On that same note, and because I had to get, you know, a third Nick into the program, squeeze that in, a little personal preference there. At Hagmies is saying the same things we always fret about going to Pullman, inexplicably not playing defense. Now, while I'm less concerned about this because Coach Lanning's obvious emphasis on the defensive end of the football, it's always something present in Ducks fans' minds. And until it changes, why not? I can totally understand that.
Well, I mean, it's completely fair. I feel like when Oregon has played games at Washington State up in Pullman, I don't remember the last one that went off without a hitch. Let's put it that way. Even the game that they won in 2020, they won after trailing at halftime. It was an ugly, difficult ball game back in 2018. We know how that one went. Game day, Garner Minshew. Woof. We're also very well aware 2016 did not go better, despite the fact that Oregon was rocking one of my favorite helmets they ever wore, and they only wore it for one game ever. Did not go well whatsoever. Before that, 2014, very difficult matchup. Oregon was able to win by a score. We mentioned 2012 in Seattle, 2010 with the injuries. Every single year I'm going back. We're 10-plus years back into games at Pullman now, and I'm still realizing there is a consistent thread of these games being difficult. So I don't think it's at all outside of the realm of possibility for somebody to want this Oregon team to, you know, play some defense.
Absolutely. And then one last one, and another little bit of personal bias leaking through here, but at Amy Olson 123, she came out to Ranchito Grill after the BYU game, was able to listen and bear with me while I told some jokes, and also was able to win a signed Nick Cody jersey now that was worn specifically against UW. So can't wait to see her rocking that Knotton Stadium here pretty soon. But she had a couple of great points here. She's concerned about their skill at stripping the ball, Bo being able to get past his reputation of bad on the road play, and Wazoo always has some trick, but she's feeling way better after the BYU game. And honestly, that's a pretty good summary of things. I would like to see us, you know, create more opportunities, not just through strips, but, you know, trying to get more turnovers through big hits, interceptions, you know, and obviously trying to get your hands up and bat some balls against this offense, you know, trying to get the ball out as quickly as Ward does. But Bo does have a reputation, as we heard from every Auburn fan out there and a lot of Georgia fans, that, you know, Bo has those games, I guess. And we have to see if that is consistent or if he's matured past that and Coach Dillingham has a plan to make sure that doesn't happen.
Well, we'll see with Bo, and that's all we can say is we'll see with Bo. I think that he has said, and it has been said so many times, that he is so much more comfortable here in Eugene. He feels more centered. He feels more grounded, if you will. I think that being back with Dillingham, the coordinator he had the most success with, has been a lot of help. But if you're flappable, you're flappable. If you have a hard time with a rough environment, you might have a hard time with a rough environment. We're going to have to see. I would love to say that the 22 version of Bo Nix, the version that is more comfortable running the ball, that has a really fantastic run game, that has some of the best protection we've seen in the nation, I would love to say that he is able to go out there and do his thing. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if this is a game that ends up being a little bit nastier, a little bit tougher, a little bit grosser, if you will. But I think that might be necessary if we're going to win some games this year. Moving on to the next point that was made that feels valid is that I think we all do feel better after that BYU game as opposed to going into this Washington State game. Are there things to correct? Sure. But we saw this Oregon team face a lot of challenges, and as we said early on, they were able to bounce back for most of them.
Yeah, and I don't think most people predicted as big a win. I know I almost did. I was pretty close, but hoping that, you know, we can. I honestly, yeah, I am feeling a lot better. I think this prediction this week is going to reflect that even more so, because you know, I was expecting things to be close to the end, and it was the complete opposite of that, and we got there the complete opposite way I would have expected us to game plan given the first 2 weeks. So I'm excited to see what they have in the install this week. That's, I think, been the most exciting thing, at least in terms of offense, is seeing a variety of different formations, seeing some I formations, seeing a bunch of different spread looks, utilizing all our different tight ends in a variety of ways. Man, I haven't remembered looking forward to an offensive game of football since that maybe 2014 or 2015 team just to see what they're going to come out and do. Because at this point, we don't know. It could be anything at this point. We might come out, you know, by the end of this season, we might be running the double wing. Who knows?
Well, I'll be very excited to see what it is for sure. I think that a big indicator in this game and a big piece of it will be, to me, Byron Cardwell health. Let's see if he's back in this ballgame. I think that Buck Irving was fantastic against BYU. I think he's proven that he's deserving of lead back role, at least for right now. I think that Whittington also had a very good game, I think 66 yards against BYU. But Cardwell really brings something else to this team. He is the most patient runner. I think that he is somebody that can make the most out of the least, if you will. Having somebody like him in this game against a Washington State team, a team that he scored two touchdowns against last year, could be big. But I think Oregon, in general, if they can run the ball, whether it is with Cardwell or whether it is with Bucky, whether it is with Whittington, whether it is with Dollars, Seven McGee, Bo Nix, James, exactly, whoever they decide, Kilohana Hassenritter, whoever they decide to have running the ball for this Oregon team, I think that if that line continue to get the kind of push they were able to get against the Cougars of BYU, the Cougars of Washington State have a problem coming.
Yeah. Well, don't forget the occasional shovel or jet sweep or something. I'd love to see us get kind of a shovel pass into Ferguson back there. But, you know, time will tell. I'm excited because this is definitely an offense that isn't going to, you know, force its way into anything. It's going to take advantage of what the defense presents. And that's really exciting. And the thing that has me, I guess, to sum up all my thoughts, the most confident going into this game, is just the not only our depth in terms of talent, but seeing that depth the past 2 weeks continue to grow and improve. And, you know, I think they're going to get some opportunities in this game. And, you know, I hope for Cardwell's health. I hope for Justin Flo to get back and healthy, but I'm very confident in our young guys in you know, the tight end room, the running back room, and the linebacker room to step up and fill whoever gets out there. I think I have a tremendous amount of confidence in.
I do as well. I think that it's going to be a fantastic day to see what this Oregon team can really do. I think that it could be a big day for a second or third receiver to really show up. I think that a guy like a Chase Cota, for example, could show up big in this game. Somebody with experience against Pac-12 foes, experience against Washington State, somebody who's got some veteran savvy, who knows how to deal with these kind of moments, these kind of atmospheres, could be a big game for him. Also, Oregon's tight ends, we talk about them all the time, but a big performance from them will mean big things to this Oregon offense all year long. Nick, I think it's that time. I think we've finally gotten to the time where we have to tell these people what is going on, what is going to happen. Tell us the final score of this ballgame.
Man, I'm still trying to kind of work out how the math works out in my head. And, you know, that's a difficult thing, as we know, anybody that's tuned into the show before. But I've got this thing, honestly, going 37-17. I've got the Ducks winning by 20. I've got, hopefully, I haven't really figured out how I want the score. Maybe a safety and two field goals, or, you know, that score to work out right there with three Camden Lewis field goals. I don't know. I'd like to see us punch it in, but I would love to see some kind of a defensive or special teams score in this game. That would tell me a lot. I know we didn't talk about that part of the game against BYU near as much as we probably should, but that's something I really would like to see, a big explosive play on the road, because that can make all the difference in getting momentum. And I think while I think it'll be a lot more competitive in the first half than it was against BYU, being on the road, having to try your footing, I do think that when we get into that third quarter, that's where it's going to be, that we just explode, separate ourselves by a couple scores, and then end up working, you know, some backups in so that Wazoo can get, you know, up to that 17 point bar.
Nick, I would really, really like to see this Oregon team be able to do a couple of things that I think they're fully capable of. Number one being, I want to see them throughout the game continue the same level of play. Like, for example, it feels like, again, it is later in these games, the score is differentiated, but seeing teams have some late scores, that's not something I want Washington State to be able to do, because I do think they'll be able to stay in this game a little bit tighter. My final score, though, I think Oregon is able to put up points similarly to how they did against BYU. It wouldn't at all surprise me to see around that same touchdown margin. I'm going to give Camden Lewis the benefit of a field goal too. Final score, in my eyes, I see Oregon coming away with a win here. Very similar score to you had, 38-21. I think Washington State, they've got playmakers. They've got scorers. They will get there. They will get a few touchdowns, but Oregon, they'll be able to outpace them after a close first half. I think that third quarter is the difference, like you said. Ducks get their first win in conference play.
Oh, I like it. I'm looking forward to it. Make sure you are following us if you aren't already. I'm at Nick R. Cody on Twitter and Instagram. Sam at Samuel101TS. And you should already be following at Once a Duck on all platforms everywhere. Like, subscribe, share with your fellow Ducks, and let us know who you want to see in the future. We got Stanford next week. So if you guys have any ideas for who you want to see that had a memorable performance against Stanford, let us know in the comments or tweet at us. It's the best way to make sure your influence is heard on the show, besides, you know, being one of the 48 people responding that we were able to select for our Twitter portion. So thank you guys for tuning in, sticking with us all the way. And as always, once a duck, always a duck.